a little late.
I was here, but I left.
Where's the cassette?
Somebody stole it.
Somebody stole it?
Mm-hmm. I'll get it back for you, though. Need some help.
It's not the way it happens.
It is now.
Motherfucker. Let me tell you something. You got no help, no nothing. What you got is exactly 72 hours to lay that cassette in my hand. If you don't, I'm gonna take all the heat that comes down on my head. I'm gonna transfer it to your body. You understand what I'm saying? 3 days. Friday morning. Be in touch.
Hey, what about my money?
Don't fuck with the government.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast, where even the black moons rise.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show, Sam Stepanenko.
I have my driving gloves on. All shades right. On.
My Ryan hairdo, Gosling jacket.
Not so much because I ain't got no hair left.
It's okay now that it's Tommy Lee Jones.
It needs to be foofier.
What I have is pretty foofy.
Yeah. But I mean, like,
you could still probably pull out a good skullet.
For sure. I got lots of hair in the back.
Oh, yeah. Do the Michael Bolton.
Fitting on top, long and back.
There yeah, yeah.
Trish Cockland, everybody.
Hey there. Got the 80s hair going. Curly and foofy. Lots of mousse. That's the key.
Oh, that wig. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Oh, the wigs.
The wigs, thankfully, it didn't seem to matter, even with their normal hair, too.
No, it's just in a different color.
Yeah, 80s hair.
Yeah, so this week we're going to be remaking the, I'm going to say, almost forgotten at this point. This is a John Carpenter scripted movie, Black Moon Rising, from 1986. And I think I've seen it before. Like, I don't remember it, and I can kind of see why this didn't stick in my head, because the trailer looks bitchin'.
Mm-hmm.
And
doesn't deliver.
And it, yeah, kind of just, man, talk about, like, an over-convoluted idea, and a, such a ton of wasted space.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a simple
and a good
concept,
cast.
Right? It's got a great cast, and the concept itself is simple. Stolen car, stolen government secrets, match them together, right?
No. We got a thief who's being hired by the government, the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Why they need him in the first place, I don't know, but I guess this is better than going to jail. I didn't get it.
Independent contractor.
It doesn't fucking make sense.
Plausible deniability. That's his purpose.
Okay.
It's like
so
a black ops.
They're trying to get evidence on this corrupt business, and he's basically stealing their taxes.
Which doesn't really come back.
Yeah, and this is back on really old computers that are on tape and all that stuff, magnetic tapes. So these days, they've just hacked the shit out of them. And he's winds up stealing it. Almost getting caught. One of the guys knows who he is, so he's chasing him. So that winds up being in the back burner of
sort of a subplot
of this movie. And he has to hide it temporarily because he's not going to get away fast enough before they catch up with him. So he hides it behind this license plate on this experimental car that had just done a test run in the desert. And that is stolen by a car thief that works not just any car thief, but this is industrialized car theft. Like, yeah. This is big business car theft that doesn't make a lick of sense.
No.
It's gone in 60 seconds.
It is gone in 60 seconds, but this is, like, industrial. Yeah. This guy's got two buildings.
But you spend more time with the guy. Like, in Gone in 60 Seconds, you spend more time with the Christopher Eccleston character in this one.
There are two evil corporations in this movie.
Yes.
And
very 80s.
You have the two leads are thieves, and they're the ones we're supposed to be rooting for. But then you have a trio of actual good, decent people who are actual good guys who are also caught up into this whole thing.
Yeah, the guys who. Yeah, so you got one guy who's
an experimental car.
Yeah, you got the NASA scientist dude who made the car, and you've got the driver and the mechanic.
Yep.
And they're trying to get investors into funding this new race car.
Yeah.
It's a water powered vehicle.
It is hydro power. Yes.
It's a whole new game changer, which I thought they didn't go far enough with. We'll get into that. I'll save that for later. But yeah, so it's an experimental car. That's the other bit about the whole thing. So yeah.
And this was a real car. It was a Canadian car.
Hey, car?
No, that was not a good car.
No.
Yeah, so it's a Canadian car. It was based on a prototype design called the Wingo Concordia 2, which was first unveiled in the public in 1980, and only one was ever actually built, so the movie version is like a copy, a kit car cast of it.
Ah.
Yeah.
I can see why it never got made, because even in 1987, it looked cheesy.
It did kind of, yeah, it didn't really look like, when the big fancy car doesn't look as good as some of the muscle cars in the background, then you might have a problem.
Yeah, it was flat colored, like the black was flat, and it just the shape of it was very cheesy.
Well, and the movie's named after the car, and you don't get much. Like, you get something at the beginning when Linda Hamilton steals the car, and then the stuff near the end.
That's it.
And that's it.
And like, the middle is, it's locked away in the basement.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, then it sort of goes back to the government secrets and sort of about the car and then about the bad guy. I mean, like you say, the design is really weird. I mean, I would have probably given it a lot more leeway if they'd had an explanation as to why it looked the way it looked. You're like, going, it's not pretty, but that's what it has to be like to make it work properly or something.
Yeah, or if they'd done sort of what they do now, where they use like weird paint on cars so you can't see what their body shape really looks like, which is what I would like to do with the remake, is kind of have that weird look to it.
I don't know contouring for cars.
I don't know about you guys, but I actually cast a new car in my fantasy casting.
I kind of did in my head. I didn't write it down, but
I found one, and it was like the first thing I found. I'm like, that is weird and fucked up looking, and I love it.
Is it the Elon Musk one?
Nope.
Okay, because that looks a lot like this car.
Yes.
No. Although you couldn't help but think about that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
When watching this movie. Yeah.
And that's why I said I kind
of
did.
Because this car in the movie, it's made of lightweight Kevlar and bulletproof materials.
Which plays later in the movie.
Which is helpful. Yeah. I mean, if you're
I did get right.
Which does make sense, I guess, in some respects. If you could make it lightweight and durable, if you're going at that speeds and like rocks or anything are kicking up, it's going to hit that windshield like a bullet.
Oh, absolutely. So, it makes sense within the context of that if you can go that fast in it.
Yeah, although the speeds they were hitting weren't that impressive, but maybe by 1986 they were impressive.
Well, for a hydraulic...
And I guess there was miles per hour. We're kilometers here in
and
Canada.
It's a hydro-powered vehicle, right? Combustion from oxygen, separation of oxygen from hydrogen is not as efficient as gasoline combustion, right? So that lightweight makes sense that way as well to take advantage of that less efficient combustion.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How do I know this?
I don't know.
Science. That's why we don't have hydro-powered cars yet.
Science.
No, it's not the most efficient way to do it, but...
Or extrapolating electricity from water. That's more likely than combustion.
So this movie, it kind of wastes a lot of time with trying to create this weird love story. You know, it's weird. Like, I did my research afterwards. I was watching the movie, and I'm like... The way Tommy Lee Jones is acting, not a lot of dialogue, which seems to be not playing to Tommy Lee Jones's strengths, but the way he's doing it, I'm like, it's like this is a Charles Bronson movie that never changed its script for Charles Bronson. As soon as I was watching him, I'm like, God, there are times where I'm like, I swore I was watching Charles Bronson.
You cleared it up. It was bothering me as well.
And then I did my research, and it fully was intended for Charles Bronson. Like, when John Carpenter wrote this movie, he did it 10 years prior.
This
is the first script he sold, and it's been sitting on the shelf. And of course, you know, when he got hot, they dusted it off. But this is one of the first scripts he sold that he didn't direct. It just took a while to get going. When you think about, okay, then there would have been 76 when he wrote this. Yeah, that would have been Bronson's heyday.
Yes, it would have been. And absolutely, you really did nail it on the head there.
I don't know. I was about, I don't know, a third or more into the movie, maybe halfway, when it really clicked. I'm like, God, this is a Charles Bronson movie.
When I think about it, the whole bit with the motorcycle, where he's just perching on it, makes me think of like Bronson a la Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm. That actually felt more like a Tommy Lee Jones moment. But
see, but that's sort of the, shirtless just with jeans.
Yeah, when the few times with the dialogue where it's a little punchy, just because Tommy Lee Jones is ad-libbing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nice, is because he could see the moments where he needed to kind of punch it up. And you can see his natural charisma and personality pop through a little bit. And I think we needed more of that in this movie if it would have been a Tommy Lee Jones movie. Sure. But I'm not sure how much the director, even the producers, were willing to give leeway to Tommy Lee Jones. This is right around the time where he was having his drinking issues. And Linda Hamilton hated working with him because of it.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, I mean, I'm sure they made up.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Some of the scenes where he's dealing with Marvin, those would have really popped if you just had a Tommy Lee Jones that was smart ass and just giving it right back to him.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. There are all those moments, especially the moments where he's on screen with Johnson, Bubba Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Bubba Smith.
Bubba Smith. Sorry, too many Bubbas.
No, they're not.
Just one Bubba.
I really only know of one Bubba.
No,
he's the Bubba.
Well, he is the Bubba, but there is a Bubba Wilson too.
Okay,
why we don't know.
Yeah. You're the only one who knows who that is.
Maybe I just fucked it up.
To me, he was the best part of Police Academy.
He was.
Yeah.
But regardless, those scenes there, you could tell that's where he was kind of having that fun, because he kind of wisecracked him all the way through it.
And why have a giant like Bubba Smith in this government role where he doesn't do anything?
Right?
Like, manhandles and intimidates with his size a little bit, but he doesn't do anything.
See, and I was thinking,
he actually got higher billing than Robert Vaughn in the trailer. You'll hear that later.
But I think it would have been a better, I thought what they were trying to do and what they should have really leaned into is he is this big imposing guy. But I would think it would be funny is like he just doesn't use it often. Like he's like, yeah, no, people just generally do what I want.
Yeah.
I'm just, because I'm a nice guy. Like, I'd like to have him think it's because legitimately he's good at talking to people and doesn't understand it's because he's huge and intimidating.
I love that, because it certainly plays to my casting for recast.
It's a funny feeling that we may have gone the same way on the recast.
I bet you all three of us cast the same person, the way I'm thinking here.
Yeah. Because we all love this particular actor.
Yeah, it's very likely.
Passionately.
Yeah. Oh, no. This could be a first. You're all going to have to wait.
Yes. Yeah. No, he is underutilized. And I mean, the only reason that character even exists is to push the government secrets or the government information story forward.
Yeah, right? I feel like this movie doesn't utilize its assets properly. Mm-hmm. And when you start looking at like the Fast and the Furious franchises, which liberally steals from car movies, including this one.
Yes, well, I wrote that down. Fast and the Furious did that too.
Yeah, so I almost feel like a remake needs to steal some of it back. Like, if you've got these assets and you can create a team, because this is also a heist movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can create this team with these undertones of a spy movie, like on paper, this sounds really cool, but you need to smooth out the bumps, and there are a lot of bumps, and just get rid of a lot of the wasted space.
Yes. And more action, better choreographed action, because it was bad even for the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, when you've had good car movies like 10 years prior to that, and this is a car movie that doesn't have any car stuff.
Yes.
Or at least convincing car stuff.
The car chase is a bit underwhelming.
Well, the problem is that car, the kit car that they made, the window was plexiglass. Like, every bit of light just, you couldn't see shit. Yeah. So they were basically careful filming it. More than likely, they sped up the footage.
Oh, I'm sure.
Just to make it look a little more action.
You can tell when she hits the turbo and she goes up the tunnel that it's sped up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah, let's have the fire thing from the Batmobile.
Yeah, and I had a real question about it because basically it's kicking out when she gets to the tunnel and then she hits the ignition, but then it's working at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, there's all kinds of questions about that car.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Okay, well, I think this is a good time to run the trailer for Black Moon Rising 1986, and we'll come back and really dig into this. We'll speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Meet Sam Quint. When the government has a job they can't handle, they get him.
You are a thief.
Hell yes.
His specialty is getting in.
What makes you think I'd help you?
You have an honest face.
Getting out. You've got no help, no nothing. You've got 3 days. And getting away with it.
What exactly do you expect me to do for you?
Not a thing.
You know this man?
No.
But this time, the rules are different.
I'm gonna take all the heat that comes down on my head. I'm gonna transfer it to your body.
The stakes are higher.
You betrayed me.
I only wish I had.
Because stealing from Sam Quint is the biggest mistake you can make. Now, he's going in. After her. After them. After the Black Moon.
Game is over.
I wish there were a couple of ways we could do this.
There's only one way.
Tommy Lee Jones. Linda Hamilton. Bubba Smith. Robert Vaughn. From the mind of John Carpenter. Black Moon. Rising.
That was Black Moon Rising from 1986 with the story and screenplay by John Carpenter, who we, at this point, have talked about a whole boatload.
A whole boatload. Mm-hmm.
A whole boatload. First time we talked about in episode 27, which is also the first episode Sam ever was on.
Yes, it was. Yes. They Live.
That's right. And then episode 59.
I missed that one.
That was Halloween.
Oh, yes. For fuck's sake.
Right.
That was Halloween.
And episode 120.
Assault on Precinct
15. Yes, that's it.
And episode 200.
Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
That was fairly recent.
Yes,
that was fairly recent. With the screenplay by Desmond Nakano, who did Last Exit to Brooklyn, and William Gray, who wrote The Philadelphia Experiment from 1984, Prom Night from 1980, which we'll probably cover someday because it is a remake, has a remake out there, and yes. The Changeling from also from 1980. Maybe we'll remake that one someday because it is a stellar horror movie that I'm sure all of you have forgotten about.
It's good, but you could speed it up a lot.
It could use an update.
It definitely could use an update. Directed by Harley Kukulis and starring Tommy Lee Jones. Everybody should know him as Quint. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, obviously Men in Black, No Country for Old Men. He's gone on to have a huge career, but he wasn't quite there yet in 1986. And he'd still be kind of working on these kind of middling things until Under Siege kind of pushed him over.
Over the top. I mean, he had a working career. I mean, he was in some pretty recognizable stuff. Coal Miner's Daughter, Executioner's Song. So he was working, but as you said, he was in the middle of a sort of drinking problem at this point in his career as well. So that makes a difference, right?
Which can make you hard to employ for a while.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I had a friend over before I watched this and we watched the new Terminator, Dark Fate, and then I watched this. Linda Hamilton ruled the night that night. And of course, everybody knows her from the Terminator franchise 1 and 2. And the last one nobody saw.
And Beauty and the Beast, the TV series, which was
exactly
a well-loved TV series for some strange reason.
For its short stint,
And it's one of those people where it's like, the hair is terrible in this movie, but I still can't get over the fact I'm like, Linda Hamilton's just gorgeous, even with terrible 80s hair.
Yeah, it's hard to make her look bad, that's for sure. Robert Vaughn was the guess, the head villain, because line them up.
Well, he's the only real villain. Everybody else is kind of henchmen. Even the ones for the other company are kind of henchmen.
Yeah, I'm just going to call him skeevy corporate guy, because he was just more gross than anything else.
Pervy.
But yeah, very pervy. Most people will remember him as Napoleon Solo from the Man from U.N.C.L.E. TV series. And we did talk about him in episode 105.
Magnificent Seven. But, interesting that you mentioned that, because you mentioned Charles Bronson in Magnificent Seven. So.
Exactly.
Wow, it's all coming together.
Yeah, it's all coming together.
Webs.
Richard Jekyll was Earl Wyndham, and we've actually talked about him before. He was the Earl was the scientist, the NASA guy who developed the car, and we talked about him in episode 116.
310 to Yuma, another Western.
Yes,
another Western. Lee Ving was Ringer, and he was on the Fame TV series, but Trish would know him probably best from
Clue.
Yes, Mr. Body.
He was Mr. Body, but depending on which ending you saw, he might have just been Mr. Body's butler.
Ooh. Well, we won't ruin that mystery for you.
No, you've got to watch Clue, all of the endings.
And, of course, Bubba Smith was Johnson, and everybody remembers him as Hightower from the Police Academy movies. Yes. And Dan Shore was Billy Lyons, and this was the driver of the Black Moon, and he was probably best known from Tron. He was not Tron, but I'm trying to remember the character's name, but he was like
the other main guy,
basically the sidekick. And a lot of people recognize him from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure as well.
Billy the Kid.
He was Billy the Kid, exactly. William Sanderson was Tyke Thaden, and this was the mechanic who couldn't talk. Was he deaf as well?
He was a deaf mute.
He was a deaf mute as well. I didn't realize he was deaf until they were trying to call for him when he was going to get run over there.
Yeah. And it is so weird that they cast somebody who's such a great actor and has such a great voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was
with
baffled.
No dialogue.
Isn't he so Larry of I'm Larry and this is my brother Daryl and this is my other brother Daryl? So he's gone to the non-speaking Daryl role?
Yeah, and people, if you want to check him out, he was in The Rocketeer and even Blade Runner. Like, he was one of those 80s guys. He's that guy you saw on that thing that one time.
Yes, and he is so talented. He's got a huge resume.
Huge.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean,
and I'm baffled that we never talked about him until now.
Me too.
I kept looking as well, because I'm like, I swear to God, we've talked about him.
But go figure. Because I guess he's mainly more known for television than he is for film, but he's in everything. Keenan Wynn had a short, pointless role in this movie as Iron John. It's a cool name.
I love him.
We have talked about him a whole bunch of times. The first time was in episode 38.
I missed that one.
That was Point Blank.
Oh, okay, yes.
And then in episode 107.
That one I did get, Absent Professor.
Absent-minded Professor.
Yes, sir, Absent-minded Professor.
And yeah, he did show up.
Yes.
And episode 128, The Mechanic. And episode 148.
Piranha.
The Mechanic. Bronson.
Exactly.
Yes. A lot of connections to Bronson here.
That's right. Nick Cassavetes was another heavy in this movie as Lewis. He was kind of Ryland's thug in this movie. And we talked about him way back in episode 35, one of our most popular ones on YouTube, which was
The Wraith.
Yes. The Wraith.
And I actually got that one, and I wasn't even there for that.
And, I knew that one off the top of my head, because it took me a while to figure out who he was.
And episode 56.
Blind Fury.
Blind Fury. Richard Angarola was Dr. Mulatto, and he was also in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., so Robert Vaughn brought a friend.
the U.N.C.L.E. men. This is what happened after their careers at U.N.C.L.E.
That's right. Don Keith Opper had a short role in here as Frenchie, and he was like in the first four Critters movies.
Nice.
And William Marquez was Reynoso, who I honestly don't remember, but he was actually in another episode we talked about, which was 122.
Bedazzled. I didn't miss all of them.
There's one, and I can't quite confirm it because he's got such a tiny, tiny role. I'm pretty positive that one of the tech guys, when they're investigating the cameras, is also the black eye that gets food poisoning in our airplane episode.
That's entirely possible.
Because he's got maybe two lines, but his face, I swear to God, is the same guy.
Yeah. I'll sometimes skim, but once they start naming them, like, valet and office manager.
Guy sitting at table. Yeah.
I looked at all the credits and I couldn't find tech guy.
Then I just stopped looking unless I recognized their face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason I did is because his face was like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah. You could entirely be possible. Everybody cross-reference. I'll wait for you.
Yes, please. No, if you know the credits, I kept looking at all the credits and I didn't see tech guy. So I don't know what he was credited as.
Yeah, that could be. He would have been definitely been very busy in the 80s. So yes, that would have been right around the time he would have been very active. So.
Well, Airplane was only 2 years before this.
Maybe a little. Yeah. Two or three. Yeah. Mm. I want to say 82 or 83.
But it's still the right time frame.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into Black Moon Rising here. Now, we got Linda Hamilton, who's the car thief, who's working for Ryland, and he has a building that's gone up. He's actually got these two. It's a pretty cool building. It looks like this round building that's been split down the middle. And they don't actually have any links. Yeah, it does kind of look like something would have in downtown Calgary here. Yeah. And one building's still incomplete inside, so it's fairly empty. Mm-hmm. And the other one's, I think, partially developed up to a certain amount of floors. What did he do other than, like, you can't build a building based on car theft ring. So
even high-end cars.
No. So what did he do? It didn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, there is a sign up front that does say that I think Ryland Enterprises or something along those lines. Like, he may be a real estate developer, and the car theft is just a sideline to sort of
throw it in the basement.
I think it's one of the many things he does.
Yeah, I think he is. He's one of those people with his fingers in a lot of pies.
A lot of legal pies.
Legal and illegal, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, and actually here's one of our easiest fixes, is there'd be an irony there if his corporation was the one that they were investigating in the first place.
That's the simple fix. Please. That's what would just smooth this whole thing out. I'm like, well.
And there's an irony there too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that would get Quint there so much quicker. Like, why do you have Quint going into another company just to have a heavy from another company coming after him, when you could just merge this Ringer and Lewis guy, smooth them out? This is the company they're looking at and want to learn about their legal organization
and
of all the stuff that they're doing.
I mean, you could still keep the tape or the evidence being hidden in the car, because that sort of raises it where he's like going, the thing that they're looking for, they actually have, but they don't know.
Yeah, and that's what I mean about the irony is if he'd...
go ahead.
If he had obtained the information and was on a USB drive or a portable hard drive that he tucked into the vehicle somehow, that would be ironic that they have it even as they're looking for it.
Now, here's what I want to do. The car already exists, and it is developed and paid for legally by Ryland, but he's got the one he's kind of selling as the show concept car and the one that is the high-tech spy car that is doing a lot of, like, this thing is decked out. It is basically a rolling hacking machine. It can run drones, like, a whole sorts of stuff. Like, I want this thing to be just kitted out. And if he's already got it, like, the Black Moon, you don't have to hide anything on it. Maybe the information's already in it, and that's the source they need to go. Or the best way to get it is use the car to hack into their own company, or for Quint to hack into the company itself.
And see,
that makes sense.
And
I like that.
I had an even different take on it.
Okay, what do you got?
Where it was, the car itself is sort of the prize, if you will, because you'd have a lot of petroleum companies who'd be like, oh no, we will pay you to make this car disappear because we cannot possibly have this out there.
That's also really good.
Especially considering it's kind of based on fact, because it's happened.
Mm-hmm. It really did.
Yeah, well, just look at how they squashed the electric car for years and years and years.
And the whole Tucker.
And how Los Angeles had a lot of public transit until they decided that they didn't want it there. Until people paid.
Yeah, so that's also a possibility. I don't want to make Quint the bad guy and working for another corporation, though. So maybe this is a car developed by a rival company that does get stolen by Ryland.
There you go, because he also wants the monopoly if it does get through. Like, he's
hedging
he's hedging his bets. He can either make it disappear, get paid that way, but if it's going to happen anyway, he'll have the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he can reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not bad.
I still like the high-tech hackiness of the car as well.
Yeah.
Well, and that gets rid of that kind of combines the whole corporate espionage problem and the car itself were kind of combined into one thing, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. simplifies the story a little bit so that you can have yeah. more fun with the car chases and the action and all that stuff.
And, mm-hmm. and also the legitimate business. He's yes. not just stealing cars. This car itself is the thing.
We could even get rid of the entire car theft ring at that point.
It feels tired.
You can have Nina being just a contractor, but she's just good at stealing cars.
Yeah, that may, she's stealing it for Ryland. But the only thing is, the movie's called Black Moon. Like, if you have her steal the car, it does take the car off the table again for a while, and I don't want
ooh.
That.
Ooh, I sort of have it. Okay, you know how they sometimes pay people to hack into systems to find all the vulnerabilities? Mm-hmm. Nina's kind of like that. They're like going, okay, can you find out if you can steal this car? And he just hires her to do it. Mm-hmm. It's another way, but I
we
don't
can,
know.
We can work. Actually open the movie with her stealing it rather than Quinn mm-hmm. stealing it.
Yes.
And then move it forward a year or so, 6 months or so. Yeah, they've yeah. had the car and they've changed it. They've kitted it out a little bit for their own usage, yeah. and now it's this super spy car that absolutely. They're using for all sorts of corporate espionage and assaults.
It can also be, it's basically invisible, like they because of all the hacking and all the amendments, like it gets into places they can't normally get to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Maybe?
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't want to turn into a transformer, but...
No, it's not a transformer. But, it can just interfere with
yeah, well, what
cameras
if,
and...
Yeah. Yes. The car I have in mind here has all sorts of things. So what if we can launch drones from it? What if we could do a projection so it looks like something else mm-hmm. on the normal streets?
See, I'm liking that idea. Yes. That kind of goes along with Trish's
yeah.
thing.
I mean, if you're going to go like Fast and the Furious ridiculous, and this movie is ridiculous at
yes.
times.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, you know, we're going to borrow from that. And I'd like to have our team put together by the guys who originally developed the car.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they've gone to Quint trying to get it back.
Yes, that idea.
And the government is aware of this company and something's going on there, and maybe they've put this team mm-hmm. together. These are the guys who made the car. You're really good at this sort of thing. Yeah. You're a good hacker. You're a good thief. We need somebody with very specific skills for this.
Yep.
You're working for us now, which is the Kurt Russell role.
Yeah.
Well, and from Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
I almost feel like it should be in the universe, but
yeah. But, and I mean, that's essentially what happens anyhow. You're just yeah. tightening it all up, right?
Yeah. So now,
and making the car the thing.
Yeah.
Which is
so now
what
you
should have been.
So now you have that family of a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's put together,
and you could have it like, and you. I like keeping the idea of these good guys as sort of idealistic when they're like going, "We developed this car because that oil ain't gonna last forever, and we got to figure out how to like we can use water. We just have to make sure we don't fuck it up." Like yeah. they're idealistic in their beliefs for the car.
Yeah, I don't know if it has to be hydro, but we'll let some science geek or gobbledygook guy to
yeah.
make up some words that
exactly.
sound like it's something.
Yes.
But it has to be a threat to regular cars. That's what the key is.
Well, yeah. I mean, we joked about it at the beginning of the episode or before we even started talking about the Tesla, how it's sort of moving the electric car forward in mm. sense in terms of being a performance and power, because they are comparable to
the Prius and-
to some of these gasoline-fueled cars or these fossil mm-hmm. fuel vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you still need some.
We do have a bit of a loophole, so we do have a bit of a problem. Whoever's funding the building of this car, okay, yeah, it's stolen, but why don't they just build another one, right?
Well, and that's where our Nina comes in. Not only does she steal a car, but she crashes their system. It gets lost.
Okay. Yeah, we need something yeah. so the plans are gone. I almost feel like their Earl character needs to go.
Yes.
Just to keep it off the guy who developed it from developing a new one under our new structure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that character would exist regardless. It's just how you incapacitate him.
But I think maybe you're going to have to kill him earlier in the movie.
You can tighten it up.
Kill him instead of Tyke?
Yeah. Honestly, yes. Tyke was so useless, I would almost wrote him out. I don't know if I
or
even cast
Iron
him.
Or Iron John.
Oh, I did cast him.
Or Iron, make it like it's the Iron John character. Iron John gets killed. And this guy, it's instead.
That was another useless character.
An absolutely useless character. I didn't even cast him.
I'm like, yeah, who's working on a construction site?
I did for
site
fun because I wasn't sure.
In a hospital bed.
In a hospital bed. In
on
a
life support.
On life support in a trailer.
Yeah. I didn't have him in my head like that. I just had him as like somebody who knew about buildings, yeah. like the system.
Yeah, like almost like a mentor to Quint. But that's, mm-hmm. I mean, you can still have that type of
yeah.
character.
Just a mentor character. That's all I had.
But that was one of the big failings of this movie is too many fucking characters.
Yeah, too many characters and that didn't do anything. Yeah. So we've already merged Ringer and Lewis,
yeah,
which helps. And we've merged the companies into one as well. So we don't have another rival company trying to get there.
And we've merged the MacGuffin into one thing as well.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah, which is much better.
So if you have some agency that's working with Quint and these guys, the remaining guys who were involved in the development of the car. So you've got the original driver, you've got the mechanic who kind of knows the workings, but unfortunately the NASA guy is now gone and there's a little too much above the mechanic's head.
Like he can't recreate some of it.
I had an idea. Because, I mean, it's tropey. It's really tropey. But what if we have the government involved because they see a military application for it?
Oh, for sure.
Right? And they actually want Ryland's company to develop it as a military device.
Yeah, instead of getting it back, they want to get it back for the government.
Yeah.
And the way I want to end the movie is Quint doesn't give it back.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that I like that because I like –
because he sees like the evil applications. Mm-hmm. Like, well, these guys are already using it for something bad and have – decked it out for that, and the military is like, ooh, we like it. We want it. And he doesn't want anybody to have it.
Yeah.
No. And well, he'll learn that along the way. Yeah.
Guys, I like the idea of the military has, and that's why they bring Quint in, is because Ryland was developing for the military, but he's now secretly trying to sell it to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they bring him in. That's their motivation. It's not that he's developing it for military uses and they want it. It's that he's
afraid he'll sell it to the other people.
Oh, yeah. No, I always figured Ryland, we want to build him up instead of a car thief or thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's illegally selling weapons. He's already a contractor for the government, but he's also double dealing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. With the enemy. Like, what was
but
it?
That makes him back
Nicolas
being
Cage.
The guy who developed the car.
No, he's stolen the concepts, reverse engineer it, and turn it into a military application versus a beneficial vehicle for the average Joe.
Yeah. I don't think, like, Ryland, I think he would keep this for himself because it's good for him. For everything, like he can find out about corporations, get them under their thumb, what they're doing illegal. Like it's good for all sorts of applications, and it's his secret weapon. So I don't think he'd sell it.
But he's lying to the government and saying, "Well, no, it's not working. It's not."
Well, he can't lie to the government because he's not supposed to have it in the first place.
We have him at developing it.
If he stole it, he's not going to tell the government he stole it.
Well, yeah, there's that, isn't
there? Now the government might be aware that they stole it because there's something weird going on here. It kind of matches what this car could potentially do that went missing.
Yeah.
That's how they come in. And I mean, it's not like they wouldn't see whispers. They're trying to find the proof that he's been double dealing.
And you could have the whole thing too, where he's been using it to find out little secrets about them.
The
and
original,
like, you can't have people
the original
know.
Company had the military interested in the vehicle.
Yeah.
That's how the government gets in. You don't want Ryland dealing with he's already dealing with the military through other contracts, but the military can't know he has the car because the government would know that was stolen and that's illegal. So he can't let the government know he has it. Now, that could be all black room stuff and you're
that's
dealing
what
with
I was thinking.
Bad agents.
You can have him you could still have him like being part of the contractors that are working on it, but he just stole it from his own place because he knows how to get it.
Okay, wait a minute. Good FBI agent, Bubba Smith, Johnson, whoever we cast, he's the good agent.
Mm-hmm.
And his partner in this movie, who really didn't say anything, he's the bad agent. He would be Ringer.
Yes.
Yes.
So Lewis, and we've separated Lewis and Ringer again.
Yeah.
But now the double dealing agent who's trying to he's looking for a good paycheck here, really. He's seeing other military applications, and if he takes it as a payoff, or he's looking for it so he can go rogue and start his own little thing.
Well, he could be, to him, it could also be a retirement plan, because you have all these people who retire from military service and are just guns for hire.
Right.
And he's like, if I have this, I'm the best gun for hire.
Yeah, but these guys aren't military, though. These guys are like CIA.
Ringer also works for Ryland.
Yes.
You know, he's the one who's been arranging for some of these other backroom deals behind the government's back.
He's the one who told him about the car in the first place.
And, yeah.
And he's keeping Ryland's name out of it and as clean as possible. So he's doing all the stuff. Mole. He's the mole in the government, kind of keeping them off track and off kilter.
And giving him, and it gives that character more to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And definitely gives that character more to do other than beat up Quint.
Yeah.
Yes.
All the time. Yes,
I know. There could have been so much more happening there. That poor bastard
was taking a lot of beatings.
Yeah, he looked terrible.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good.
We're getting somewhere, yes.
I think we're getting somewhere
with it. And yeah, and I could say the government is also terrified that he could use the car to find out all their dirty
laundry. Yeah. Now, okay, so Linda Hamilton will still be the driver of the car.
She's the operator. Like, that's what she does.
She does, yeah. She's the one who stole it. She's the one who's learned how to operate it. And she does a lot of the secret spy stuff. And this is where you can get into it. Yeah, it's a bit tropey, but Quint can still kind of smooth in there a little bit as she's kind of getting more disillusioned with Ryland, which we see. I didn't like that she was never let in on what Quint was doing because I felt like she needed to eventually turn and work with them.
Yeah.
Because you do, at the end of the movie, you kind of want her to be working with them and have the car.
Yeah. And I think
it'll help them get the car.
A fairly simple fix is he can sort of point out to her that what she's doing is affecting not just other companies, but it is starting to affect her country. Right,
and get other humans.
Other humans, and yeah, have him sort of touch on her moral guidelines and make her sort of question her motivations for doing things.
Yeah, I don't think she's even aware of everything that car can do.
Yes.
And
even though she's the one who runs it,
there's a lot of room. Well, I mean, you've got OnStar, right? Yeah. Like, you can have people drive your car for you.
Yeah.
So think about this in a more high-tech way where, okay, we need you to drive here and launching. And she's not fully aware of what Ryland is doing when she's doing it. So she thinks they're just heists, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Or she just thinks she's testing the car.
Or she's... Yeah, that's a possibility. Or it's just more than what she thinks it is. And she's becomes less comfortable as she uncovers it. Or she just is bored because now she's got this thing and all the stuff she used to do is being remote controlled through this car, through other people, and it's taken the fun out of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I like that. She's like,
she's a thrill seeker.
I used to drive out of a heist, and now I don't, and that pisses me off.
Yeah,
she has to be morally gray, just like she is in the original.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then sort of make her way over to the, quote-unquote, the right side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that much in the original movie. She's gotten disillusioned, but she stays loyal. It's Ryland who gets more obsessive because she's sleeping with the enemy. He thinks she's talking, locks her in a room, and Quint just finds her and unlocks her. And that's when she kind of joins up because it's like, he just locked me up.
Fuck him.
And I mean, it's simple, but it's boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had the whole thing too. I just wrote this down, and it's just off the beaten path. They're in a duct, right? This is one of the few times in movies I've seen duct tape actually used for its intended purpose. I was so pleased when I'm like, they're using it in an actual duct. Awesome.
It's a good point.
It is a good point.
It was very valid. But yeah, you're right. She doesn't really... It would be nice to see the turn.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of see her rebelling against him early on in the film, but it's half-assed.
It is half-assed. It's like, I'm leaving for the day. You're making me angry. Fuck off.
She does almost drive into the wall.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see
I had a feeling Ryland was a little bit more worried about the car.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, you actually hit on it earlier on, is she has been the driver for the longest time, but now they've got it to the point where they don't need her anymore. So she has, and that's where she gets mad. It's like, well, I love this car. I love driving this car. And
she went from being essential to not essential staff anymore. She's feeling that maybe Ryland's the one turning on her.
Exactly. Yes. And she's feeling completely extraneous because the vehicle now essentially drives itself.
Yeah. And she's being left out of the information loop.
Yeah, and it's not just that. She's like going, look, I knew you're doing dodgy shit, but if you won't even tell me this, I know it's super dodgy.
Yeah, you're cutting me out on the payday.
I built this place from the ground up. Mm-hmm. I got you that nobody else could get for you, so...
And we don't even need the car theft ring anymore, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that part of the movie was kind of cool, but you don't really need it where she just has a bunch of thugs show up at a car show, and I'll take this one, this one, this one.
Yeah, and that was one of the best scenes in the whole movie, to be honest.
It was, and I kind of hate losing it, but...
But it doesn't serve a purpose.
No.
No, unless that's a side thing. And maybe Rylan gets a little pissed off because she's trying to fill the void of being bored by doing this extraneous car theft stuff just because she wants to.
Because it does serve a purpose, because that's where Quint first sees her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he recognizes her next time he sees her. So that it could still be that device there where he's...
They might even know each other because they'd travel in the same circles.
Yeah.
I kind of like that idea where they're... aware of each other. Maybe not know each other, but they're aware of each other.
Move that knowledge from Quint over to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, just aware of each other's reputations.
Yeah. And I would like a little bit of competition.
And Rylan's getting pissed off because she's making herself too visible by doing these big heists.
And drawing attention to him.
And drawing attention to his corporation as an employee and wants her to stop.
Yeah. That gives us, I think, a little more motivation.
And then we don't have to lose one of the cooler scenes. Like, I thought about three essential things that we needed to keep in our remake. Mm. And I really liked that one, but I was like, oh, I'll lose it if I have to. The jumping the car from building to building.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the skywalk from building to building.
Mm. Yes.
That's exciting stuff.
Yes.
And you want a lot more car chase within...
And and the physical action needs to be like the fighting and stuff needs to be a lot more interesting.
And you know, when we get into that stuff, because it's going to take a while for her to turn to their side, and they're going to need to kit out some of their own vehicles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have a NASA scientist anymore, but they do have a mechanic who did help build that car, or at least maintain that car, so he can at least help kit out some vehicles for the heist they need to do to get them the Black Moon back.
Exactly. And he, I mean, certainly he's going to be fine.
Gives Tyke something to do other than die.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering we're getting rid of Earl fairly early.
Yeah.
Yeah, the car gets stolen and then you could actually have Ringer be the one who kills him.
Because
it's Ringer, an assassination, right?
Yeah, well, Ringer is trying to impede this investigation and trying to... He doesn't want that car coming back, so he's there to keep that from happening.
Perfect way for him to get in the door is, hey, I'm here about the car.
And now we can have a subplot of Johnson eventually figuring this out as well. And now Johnson's got more to do as well.
Yeah.
And can eventually join the team because that's the Fast and the Furious way.
Yeah, he's dealing with a dirty partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm liking the way that goes. But yeah, and again, gives Ringer something to do. I mean, I didn't even cast Lewis because he was just a henchman for Ryland.
Mm.
He didn't really do a lot aside from bully people.
I did cast him.
I sort of did in a way. You will find out.
I mean, I guess you kind of need that typical heavy. I mean, even modern action movies always have that.
But it gets really tropey after some bits.
It does.
I like the idea of sort of having some of the faceless.
But, you know, it gives your various heroes more people to kill.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And like you just said, but you can have them as being faceless or...
The B hero gets to kill the B villain.
Yeah. Right. But you can cast wrestlers or whatever in those roles. Because let's see, have we done that before?
You know what I'd like to do is if they are faceless, we just rotate a bunch of people in and out to really illustrate the fact that he just goes through these guys so much. He cannot keep these guys alive.
Yeah, so Joe died yesterday.
They're like the stormtroopers of people of heavies and movies.
So
Bill, now you're head of security.
Yeah.
HR is busy a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, HR is just just once I want somebody to grab the secretary's ass.
Exactly. What I wouldn't do for something sexual harassing.
Just what some variety.
What I wouldn't do for an inappropriate joke.
Seriously, Mr. Ryland, you need better job security or better trained men. We can't keep having them die.
Exactly.
Quit hiring them out of magazines.
Or Craigslist. just classified ads.
Well, we want expendable if we're doing something shady, you know?
True.
Yeah, because he may have to expend them himself.
Exactly.
Yes, and that's the whole point.
Yeah. Okay, what else do we need to work on here? We took, I think... Quint doesn't need to change too much.
Yeah. No.
Nina, we've fixed. Ryland, it's kind of essentially the same, but we've just upped the scale of what he's doing now.
And we've identified his company.
It. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. We've identified what his business does.
I think we're good. We've killed off Earl. Ringer is now FBI. Johnson is still a good guy, but we'll keep him a little more into the circle of what's going on. But there still would be distrust. Quint's not going to share everything with Johnson, and we'll see that split near the end.
And rightfully so, because I think he suspects that there's already an inside man. He doesn't know who it is, though. Yeah. He's not sure if it's Johnson or Ringer or somebody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't like how close Quint played everything to the vest. Like, there was nobody he was telling anything to. Like, he's working with the Black Moon developers, but he's not telling them why he's interested. He's not telling anybody anything.
No.
And it doesn't move the story forward when he doesn't do that.
No, and we can fix that with his team,
Yeah. I feel like Billy's still kind of on the short end of the stick, but he becomes another driver, right? Yeah, so he becomes another driver as these new cars are being developed for this heist. Basically, they need several cars to do what this one car could do.
Yeah, well, and I like the idea.
And even then, it still can't do everything this car can do.
I like him to be kind of a twofer as well. He's a driver, but he's also quite interested in like the mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get all of it, but he really wants to be a part of that. So he's sort of a double dipping on the driver slash.
Yeah, I see him being like the next part, like the higher up, like it'd be Quint and then this guy who would be kind of the next leader that you defer to when Quint's not around or whatever. It's kind of, I see Billy.
Yeah, he knows enough to do what he needs to do. And yeah, he is definitely still a driver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll give him more grown up William Lyon.
Yes.
Or just call him Lyons, because that's kind of cool.
Yes.
Okay, Tyke, we figured out. He's still mechanic smart dude.
Mm-hmm. I didn't cast him.
Iron John, I guess you can use him.
No,
if you're trying to get into a secure place, then maybe just for cameo sake. Like, I honestly
cast him as a mentor character. And it was a cameo.
And that's not bad. Like,
and then you cast William Sanderson.
No, I didn't.
Oh, I cast somebody else.
No, I didn't cast anybody because I thought he was a useless character. But
no, I did just because, you know, you got to have a little cameo once in a while. Yeah. Lewis is still just right-hand man guy, thug, for the most part, for Ryland.
And I like Trisha's idea of him sort of rotating through.
Yes. I think.
Thank you so much. Like,
that one's funny, but I think it's a little too funny.
I would love Nina to be like, wait, who was here last week?
Maybe do that in the beginning of the movie. I'm like, what happened to the other guy?
Well, no, he rotates them through because he doesn't want any single one of them knowing too much about his business.
Yeah, exactly. He'll mix them up and just like going, And I would love Nina to try and use that and be like, dude, you are just so disposable. Like, why do you think that you've just started here? You're not going to be here very long.
Yeah, well, actually, we see the other guy who's there at the beginning when we see that heist just before the credits of her stealing the Black Moon 6 months, a year later. Yeah. And now it's this new guy, Lewis, and maybe in that early spot, we can see Lewis, how he got the spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, I've been told to waste this guy and he doesn't know anything about the rest of it. He's become the new right-hand guy because this guy knows too much.
Exactly.
Yeah. I suppose. I mean, I'm not crazy about it. Well, it seems like unnecessary convolution to me. But I mean, it's funny, but it's a lot of work for one gag.
But I just don't I just don't want him being a big character. I guess that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, we got lots of silent, deadly types. It's been going on.
I don't need to care about him.
Yeah, and you don't, and it every Bond movie does it. Yeah. It still happens in the Fast and the Furious movies. It's fine.
Yeah.
He's just a character that's there. I may have cast too big for it then. But you want somebody large and intimidating.
Yeah.
That's what that role requires. I think that's we've covered all the major characters.
I think
we've got a decent plot structure. It's hard to kind of describe action sequences on an audio show, and I haven't really figured them all out, but I mean, you're going to have lots of city chases and explosions and that you would get with this type of movie.
Yeah, right? And borrow heavily, like you said, from the Fast and Furious movies. I would love it if somebody borrowed from the Ronin car chase, which is one of the best car chases ever.
Oh, I love that one. That's
I mean,
so
if you
good.
Wanted to be successful, you just go Fast and Furious Presents. Black Moon Rising.
Yeah.
I think there's one thing too, when we talk about like Nina's still stealing cars on the side as her own business, is like have Ryland like really go after her for a bit on that. Like she'll get to a place and her cars are gone.
Yeah, and maybe she's starting to fear that, oh, I might get whacked now because I am very replaceable at this point. They don't need me because they have that car.
Yeah, and see, that's the side guy. That sets up that whole idea that he just replaces everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe Lewis is the guy who's keeps moving up and up and up because he fills a lot of
roles.
That's
how you get promoted.
Yeah, and you get fired by getting fired.
Yeah. And when she turns, maybe he's like, well, I'm going to use on the next thing that they're doing, he uses Lewis instead of her. I'm like, no, that's my car.
Absolutely.
That gives Lewis, our Lewis character, a little bit more to do, too, right? It gives you a little more motivation for her frustration with him, for sure. And she could have that discussion with me. Well, you're just as expendable as I am.
Yeah.
Right? Remember how you got the job?
But we could have Lewis being like that titular character who doesn't believe.
No,
he's like, I watch my own back. I can survive this.
Yeah.
I'm making myself indispensable.
Yeah. No, he doesn't turn. And then we can start to see where her disillusionment and her turning. Yeah. And we can still have, I'm not sure what the meet cute's going to be.
We don't need it.
For Quint. No. Well, we do need Quint and Linda Hamilton to meet at some point.
We do.
And Nina to meet.
We do, but we already established that they're already aware of each other.
That's true, if we've already pre-established that.
Right, because I mean, the whole romance felt shoehorned in, a very 80s
Yeah, and Quint's going to have been prepped about who the players are at this point and who's the most accessible in, and if he's already gotten in there, then maybe.
Yeah, he still follows the Black Moon. He still follows her. He's aware of her.
Yeah, I mean, in the original movie, he knows she's done something, and I think she knows he's... It's all unspoken. I think she knows.
You can smell your own.
Yeah. You know. And yet she's like, eh, fuck it.
You're a
thief
as well.
Yeah.
I'll sleep with him.
Yeah.
But it just happens, and it's not very satisfying story-wise.
No, it doesn't really feed the story very well at all.
No. Right?
Like many of the things in this movie that could have but didn't.
Yeah, which is why it's ripe for remaking, because there's lots of room to improve.
Absolutely. But yeah, it's still entertaining in and of itself, but there could be a lot more action.
Yeah.
A lot more.
Yeah, I'm having watched it twice in the last month.
That's so funny. You just did. It was like, guess which one we're doing?
And it's like, I just watched it 2 weeks ago.
Yes, but I mean, it was actually fun to watch it a second time, because I did see a couple things that I had missed the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
And I was watching it with a different eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because I don't just watch them for entertainment when we do the show. I'm watching them to see, well, what can be fixed and what can we keep.
Yep.
So yeah, it was a different watch this time.
So I think we're ready for casting here.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into the people casting, I think we need to cast the Black Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys didn't do this.
No.
Didn't.
That was the first thing I thought of. I'm like, even before I had to cast the car before I cast a person. I had some people in mind.
Yeah.
But I wanted to cast the car. So I started researching and looking up weird concept cars. And the first thing I found was from the Consumer Electronics Show from 2020. And this was the Mercedes-Benz Vision AVTR concept car, or Avatar. It is associated with James Cameron and inspired by those movies.
It looks like it is.
Its tagline was, it merges man and machine. It can read your pulse while you're driving. It senses your breathing. It's like, you're not calm right now. Maybe you should calm down. You're not driving with a full head of steam here. I'm not sure why, but...
It's an extremely expensive Fitbit.
Yeah, it's a big Fitbit. It's got a huge internal display because it's like glass doors and pretty much your entire window can be a monitor. The light-up wheels, which pivot so you can crab walk the car sideways.
Nice.
Which would
get into tight spots.
Yeah, that makes parking a snap. And it's got 33 bionic flaps on the back. Yeah. These are developed for cameras. Why you need 33 cameras on the back of your car is fuck if I know.
Well, that's for autonomous driving, right?
I suppose, I guess so.
All those sensors.
Yeah. Now, this is where I want to use these flaps for all sorts of funky things, like little drones are launching out of it, and we can make this the ultimate high-tech modern spy car by utilizing these flaps for other things.
Yeah, and it has projectors versus cameras as well, or as well as cameras, so that, as you said, could project different images, so it looks like a like a K car when it's really like
because this car's going to stand out no matter where it's at.
Yeah.
Much like the Black Moon, it didn't look great, but the Black Moon definitely stood out from everything else.
And this one will.
And this one would stand out like crazy.
I have questions just about the car itself. When we were looking at it, there's two things with the glass doors. Are there windows that go down, or can you just never put them down? And if you fart and you can't put the windows down, what do you do?
Every car is a hot box.
Potentially, for sure. Yeah.
Like, there's questions. people developed it, but they didn't think of that, I don't think.
I'm sure some of those flaps are ventilation.
Yes.
I hope so. Because that's
like
terrible.
It's like farting in an airplane, but smaller.
Maybe it's developed to run on your flatulence.
Oh, see, that would be okay.
We know some people who would be very, very good and would benefit very greatly from one of these cars.
They do call it gas.
If it's merging man and machine.
There we go.
I'm like, what? Do we have to put that there?
It looks like your seat looks like a little bit like a toilet seat, just a patch. I love that methane.
Yeah, it's got sort of like a filtered screen. So you're comfortable, but it's got a collection device underneath.
Prepare ignition. And then you hit the button and the flames go out the back.
Remember to eat lots of beans before a long road trip.
Exactly. Hey, Nina, did you have chili for lunch today?
Yeah. Are you lactose intolerant? Then this is the car for you.
Exactly. Brussels sprouts, and Brussels sprouts. That's the title. That's everything you eat.
High fiber.
Yes.
Okay, so we got our car.
Mm-hmm.
Now we need a cast. Sam, do you want to lead us in?
I will. It's funny that you mentioned Fast and the Furious because I did cast one person from Fast and the Furious.
I intentionally stayed away, but I kind of wish I had.
Well, I mean, it's a different character, but I will start with him because he actually has more to do now. My ringer is Jason Statham.
Okay.
Right, because I wanted somebody
here. Your ringer?
For ringer, yes. Oh. I don't want him as my lead because I want to do something a little bit different. But yeah, I like it when he plays a bad guy.
Okay.
Because he doesn't do it very often. For my quint, I cast Anthony Mackie because I've been watching Altered Carbon and he's really good at physical action.
Oh, I haven't got to that new season yet. Yeah. But you guys, you're casting way above my level.
Yeah.
A lot of TV guys on mine.
Yeah. For my Nina, I went with Maggie Q.
Nice.
Again, good at action, great actress, maybe a little bit older than the Nina in the original, but she doesn't need to be young.
No.
Right? And actually, I'd prefer her not to be, especially with what we've done with her.
Yeah, hers I went a little bit young, but I really wanted the person.
Yeah, I went early 30s, and I really wanted the person like 2 weeks ago. So this time I'm like, oh, this kind of works because I thought it had gone in 60 seconds kind of way.
There we go. For my Ryland, I went with Morgan Freeman. I thought that he'd be really good because he has that kind of voice that like Robert Vaughn, right? And again, I like it when he plays a bad guy or a guy who's a little bit corrupt.
That's cool. Yeah.
He has to talk about Shawshank once.
Yeah.
That's my only note.
For my Earl Wyndham, and actually this works out fairly well since we're killing him off a little bit earlier than originally planned, I cast Stephen Merchant. I wanted somebody who's kind of funny, kind of dorky.
That's
funny. I went British as well, and it's breaking my heart that I'm going to have to kill him early now.
Oh, me too. And then
one I'm killing early, I'm not happy about.
Yeah. For my Johnson, and this is the one that we think we may all be on the same page, I'm with Terry Crews.
Oh, yes. No, I did not.
Another,
that's who I did.
I went football player, big guy who I just absolutely love, and I like the idea of him bringing a little bit of comedy into that character, because I mean, there does need to be some humor in there.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, he's still going to have to be mean. And at this point, Terry just comes off huggable.
There is a little bit of that.
But I think he can still do mean.
He can do... Yeah.
I'm sure he could.
Yeah, I mean, or Tiny Lister, who would be the other one that I would go
Tiny
to.
Tiny Lister's a bit too scary for me.
If you want scary, Tiny Lister is the man.
He really is. That's why he terrifies me.
For my Billy Lyons, and I did this ironically, I went with Grant Gustin because he's driving a really fast car and he plays the Flash.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And I think he'd be a lot of fun because he's a little bit younger, but yeah.
He would be a good Billy Lyons. I really like that, actually.
Yeah. Nice. And then for my Tyke, I actually went with a deaf actor by the name of Ryan Lane, who's been in Veronica Mars for a few episodes, or was in Veronica Mars for a few episodes, and is a regular on a show called Switched at Birth. And he's quite good. Right? Mm. But I figured if I'm going to cast to type, and I wanted to go with somebody who was hearing impaired, I figured that would be appropriate.
And we could get some actual sign language in there. Because when he's talking to him, I'm like, No. If you're getting working that closely, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and that was the other thing I was thinking is let's get somebody who's actually competent at sign language and all that stuff. And then for my director, I went with Olivier Megaton. Megaton? I don't know how he says his name. But
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But,
Megaton.
Yeah,
Megaton.
But he directed Columbiana, Taken 2 and 3, Transporter 3. So he's really good at sort of like action stuff. Transporter, obviously good at directing chase scenes and driving scenes. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, I think I can work with that.
I liked Columbiana.
As did I.
I haven't seen it.
I thought it was enjoyable. There's a whole scene where she swims underneath this whole thing and there's sharks there. And I'm like, ooh, I could do that.
Well, and that was the other reason I chose him because he's good at directing strong female characters.
Yes. Yes. Someday. I maybe just as an extra, but I'll get into a shark infested area and that's what I will do.
You say it faster because get into a shark just implies you want to be eaten.
Yeah. Infested area. And then I hang out with my little buddies down there.
All right.
And that's what we do.
And that was my entire cast because I didn't, as I said, I didn't cast Lewis and I didn't cast Iron John because I didn't think he was a key enough character to warrant a like.
Oh, I just cast him because I wanted the cameo.
Yeah, that's what I did too for similar reasons. I cast him because it was like, well, this is an easy cameo to do. All right, go ahead, Trish.
Okay, and I don't know, like my cameo thing, I didn't check if he was still alive, but hopefully he is. Okay, so for my Quint, I went with John Cho. Because I'm like, oh, I haven't seen him do some stuff, and I like John Cho, and I'd like to see him in a different type of area.
Yeah, well, he could stop off at White Castle first.
Exactly.
He's good at action, Star Trek.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, like, I like him, but I'm never going to buy him as an action guy.
I want to see him get by on charm as well.
Yeah.
Which I like, because, like, if he's going to be involved with Nina, that charm has to really come out, which I didn't get from Tommy Lee.
Yeah, I not to... to rain on your parade, but yeah, I'm never going to be able to buy him as an action lead.
As an action lead,
I love him, but...
But in this, but see, after he plays this character, you're going to be like, yes, Trish, I was wrong. And then for my Nina, I started off, it could be one of these two actresses, because I was like, Letitia Wright, I really loved her in Black Panther, and there's a whole bit where she's like driving a vehicle, but like... out of time, and I thought it would be really fun to have her in there. But if we're going a little older, Janelle Monáe, I like her as well in that part.
Cool.
For my Billy Lyons, I went with Danny Putty because I'm like, for an experimental car driver, you want kind of a lean sort of smaller man because you want the driver to be light as well to make it. And I think you could bring it like a little bit of comedy there. And I made Ella Winden Octavia Spencer specifically because of the NASA line, and she was in the Hidden Figures, and I was like, that would work.
Nice. Yeah.
Some more ironic casting.
Yeah. Exactly. And my Ryland, I went into a different area. I made my Ryland Jennifer Lopez because after I saw her in Hustlers, she could play a Kingpin, and I would very much like to see her do that.
I thought about maybe doing like a female villain, but since Fast and the Furious did that really recently, it kind of made me not do that.
But the thing is, how many times has it always been a guy villain? You're like, they did it once very recently. Yeah. That's not too much.
No.
That's not an argument.
No, I felt like it's another car movie had did it recently. That's kind of why I moved away from it. But still, I totally down for it, for sure.
Because like Hustlers, she was amazing in that. Yeah. As like a whole Kingpin. And then I put Iron John leaving. Because I just wanted to put... I don't know if he's still alive, but I thought Lee Vang would be good.
He is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was like going, he's part of my favorite movie of all time, and I want to put him in a nice role.
Okay.
And that would be nice. Who Jay's Gimme is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And the evil Marvin guy, like, I didn't know what we were doing before. He was, like, the guy who was always going after him. And I made that Dan Shore, just because I thought it was funny. And then, again, for the Johnson, the FBI agent, Terry Crews.
Yeah.
And then I also cast just the other person they have training them how to get into the building, like Emile French.
Okay, Frenchie, yeah.
Frenchie. I cast Lizzie Kaplan.
Okay.
I didn't cast Emily Frenchie because I felt like Iron John and Frenchie were kind of doing the same things.
True. So, but my Iron John was just a simple cameo.
Yeah.
And then for my director, I went with Nick Cassavetes because I'm like, he's done directing. And I thought, so I kind of
I know
cast
more
as
a director
really.
These days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's directed some interesting like female leads in like The Notebook and My Sister's Keeper. So he knows how to deal with stuff. He does mostly melodrama, but I think he can do action.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he stuck with the original script, he'd be fine.
Yeah. So that's what I went with. But yeah, there's a few. I didn't do Tyke because I thought they wasted him so early. I didn't bother.
I almost didn't. It was the last thing I did cast because it kind of like, ah, all right.
Yeah, I see. And I cast him because his death was like such a key component of the movie.
Yeah, I feel like Tyke and Billy are the best places for doing some comedy. Yeah.
Oh, once we did this, I feel bad I didn't cast Tyke.
I do have a Tyke, though. All right. For my cast, for my Quint, as you said, he needs to be kind of smarmy, but come off. You kind of need that handsome but not too handsome lead and still can do the action-y stuff. I went with Carl Urban.
Yes.
From Star Trek and Dredd. And...
See, but I find him kind of handsome.
Oh, no, absolutely. But he's in that unconventional... Because I thought Tommy Lee Jones was unconventionally handsome in this movie.
Yes. He needed to wax in between his eyebrows.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The close-up.
First line, I wrote a couple of notes, and right at the end, I go, you know, brow!
Oh, the close-up when he's in bed, I'm like, ooh, yeah, somebody needs to do something about
that. Yeah, where was hair and makeup on that one?
Right?
You're totally right on that. For Nina, because, like, damn it, I didn't get to use her last time, Zoe Kravitz.
Nice.
I thought this should be great for this, and I was kind of thinking the kind of Gone in 60 Seconds where you had the Dreads, and like, I kind of see her as a similar type of character, you know, confident and...
Yeah. Doing her own thing on the side.
Doing her own thing, and we've made her pretty strong.
She doesn't need permission, she just does it.
Yeah.
And equally as competent as the lead,
For Ryland, I went with Victor Garber from Legends of Tomorrow, Titanic, and Alias.
He's very... Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just... He kind of had that stuff that Robert Vaughn was doing, and then
he reminds me of Robert Vaughn.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't tell you the other reason I also put Jennifer Lopez is because that whole like pervy, semi-sexualized thing that Ryland has for Nina. I mean, we could there's still that undercurrent of that.
I would have written it out, but I'd put it back in if it was Lopez.
Well, it was Jennifer Lopez, but like you could have that undercurrent of it as well. But because it is a woman, it's like trying to remake somebody as like your own child in your image. Yeah. Like that's where the push and pull comes
from. And it still
comes,
this parental figure. And I think maybe that was what they were trying to do.
But then they went incestuous on it.
It just feels incestuous and creepy.
Yes.
For Ringer, I went with Kobe Bell from Burn Notice and The Gifted.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. For Earl, this breaks my heart that he's dying so early, from Law & Order UK and the most recent Doctor Who, Bradley Walsh.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just thinking of him dying upsets me.
But that's, you know what? That makes it better because then you're so really lovable. Into the story if somebody you love dies.
It's true. It's true. For Billy Lyons, I went with Zachary Levi.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, Shazam and Chuck.
The thing, he was too... There's a bunch of people I looked at, but to me, they were too big to be drivers.
He might be too tall to be a driver, especially in the car I picked.
Right?
He'd practically be lying down in it.
You look at any Formula One drivers, they're not big guys.
Yeah, I probably didn't... Well, I know I didn't think about that aspect, but character-wise, I'm happy with
How's
it.
How's your type?
I did, but
can
I went,
you
fuck
flip
it.
Them?
Yeah, I probably could. But he's pretty young. I'll go straight to Tyke here. I went with Justice Smith from Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
See, yeah, I think he would be a good young driver, a young hotshot.
Okay. Either way, that works for me.
Awesome.
For my Johnson, I went with Dave Bautista.
Nice.
From Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, so we were along the same lines.
Yeah, so we almost had a triple, but...
Yeah. Well, when you said it, I'm like going, ooh. And then when you said somebody we love, and that's what Sam said, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I know, I do love Dave Bautista.
But
even
I think
though...
we're on the same lines.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
I do have to say that he has followed the lines of... Vin Diesel and The Rock had doing a kids movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like this rite of passage.
Schwarzenegger did it, too. Yeah. Everybody does it.
Yeah.
It seems to be like you have to do the action movie and then the action comedy and then the kids movie. But at least he's getting leads.
Yeah.
And I watched Stuber. It was actually pretty good.
Oh, okay.
I watched that recently. For Iron John, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
Yeah.
It just seems like that's a natural place to put him.
For sure.
It's too bad I couldn't find a place for Linda Hamilton to do a similar spot, but I don't know.
Linda Hamilton could be
maybe
the
she
person
was...
they report to at the FBI.
Oh, sure.
There we go.
Yeah, yes, get her in there somehow. Yeah. And for Lewis, Ed Screed.
Perfect.
Oh, so I think I hit the types pretty good.
You really did. Ed's going to be great in that role. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, especially now that we've beefed it up again and he's not doesn't have to be so silent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's your director?
And my director is Justin Lin. Yes. Well, already know he can do
you
it.
Had to Fast and Furious it. You
I did. Like, that is my only Fast and Furious connection.
And that was why I that's
how
skipped
I,
him.
That's how I got, like, I got kind of a TV-level cast for the most part. A few feature guys that are bankable. Mm-hmm. But when you get a guy who can direct that action, suddenly you went from 50 million to 150 million.
Yeah.
What's funny is you put Dave Bautista in there, and for some reason, every time I look at him, I'm like, why isn't he in a Fast and Furious movie? It seems like he should be. Mm-hmm. He's like, he doesn't have, like, he isn't acting with a full head of hair, which is sort of a prerequisite for most of the people in it. and he's a big guy you put in a tank top. Why isn't he in them?
Because they haven't gotten around to him yet.
I guess.
Yeah.
He just seems, he's the cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
You just shove him in.
He really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
You've heard us, Fast and the Furious. Yeah, you know what you have to do.
Buy this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's kind of worked with Vin before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not directly, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, they're getting close to retirement. You're going to want to look at another car franchise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here we go.
How much longer can they carry that thing going?
Well, I think they're closing it out at 10, but they're going to do lots of spin-offs, so...
Yeah, and they've got this stuff to spin it off. Like, they kept adding characters, so they have a lot to spin off. But it's like, what's left to do with the cars?
Yeah.
Oh, that's where Furious, the limit is happening.
Fast and Furious hasn't been a lot about the cars, so at least we did focus on the car quite a bit on this one.
We did.
We wanted to give it more time.
Yeah. And we could certainly, it would be so easy to make this a Fast and the Furious Presents kind of movie as well.
Oh, for sure.
You just have Nina making a call to Dom, right? Or to somebody saying...
Or just a post-credit sequence, because it counts for Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does.
Or you make your...
Ooh, she mentions an ex-boyfriend who taught her how to drive cars.
There we go.
It's Dom.
No, you have Johnson call Mr. Nobody.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Yep. Oh, I'd love to see Kurt Russell in this movie, because he has the hair that we need in it. Just that's the callback. His glorious locks flowing in the wind.
Yeah.
Like Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, but there would be so many easy ways to easily tie it in, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it wouldn't be too hard at all, although I think we're dealing with... Well, actually, I don't know, because New World is the one who made this. New World doesn't exist anymore. I don't know who actually owns the film library for New World, so I guess it's entirely possible for Universal to pick this up.
Yeah, and F&F makes a lot of money. They could just say, I want this, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if it does, it totally fits into the Fast and Furious universe.
Yeah.
Even the way we've revisited it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing that we haven't done that couldn't be put into that universe.
For sure.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that was Black Moon Rising from 1986, and I think our 2020 version is actually pretty cool.
It's awesome, guys. This is so good. This is so fun. It's like what we've come up with, because like everything that bothered me, I feel we've gotten to. Like everything that didn't feel right.
Yeah, or dated, or just... Cut down that bloated cast and the bloated story.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Like, streamline the many different strings that didn't need to be there. The Dollar Casino or what... I can't remember the name of it. That's how inconsequential it was. It was a casino of some kind. It was like... I keep wanting to say Looney Bin Casino, but it's like Dollar something Casino. And, yeah, the fact that I can't remember it tells you that it shouldn't be in the script.
Yeah. Right. And, I mean, it sounds like, for the most part, they worked whole cloth off Carpenter's original script, and like most scripts, they always start out a little bit bloated and then you have to trim, right? And I think that they just went, oh well, this is a good story and Carpenter's hot right now, so let's see what we can do with it, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure why it required two more writers to do that,
but yeah
because I think they almost like, all right, let me tweak it, and they just hand it back to him.
Yeah.
You know what, and some of Carpenter's scripts are so streamlined, which makes me wonder if the extra writers added the crap we don't like.
And that may be it. Yeah. And actually, it's more likely it.
Because if you get a writing credit, you have to do like 50% more rewriting. So if you add useless shit, you can get a credit.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe. And maybe all Carpenter didn't have a full screenplay. Maybe he just had a treatment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But only Zach Carpenter knows for sure.
Yeah. Well, it says story and screenplay, by the way.
It does. So I guess he probably did have a full screenplay then at some point.
I don't know.
I'd like to know what the original one looked like, though.
Yeah. John Carpenter, tell us.
They certainly used his name to sell this movie.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
The writer, John Carpenter.
Absolutely.
Despite the fact he had been involved with it for a decade.
It's very prominent. It's the second most prominent thing besides Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah. You notice that too, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty hard to miss.
Yeah. It's real huge.
Oh, yeah. This is a seriously Dodge Chrysler sponsored film. The other car he drives, the sports car that he drives, is also a Chrysler, right? So
okay, yeah. I didn't know. It looked familiar, but I didn't know what kind of car that was.
Yeah, no, they were all over that movie.
Actually, I don't know if Dodge owned Jeep in 1986-7.
Oh, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I just know it was probably.
You could tell we're car geeks.
Absolutely.
Not at all.
Well, and the only time it deviated was when they were just in that, they were in the parking garage when he's showing him the cars. But that makes the sense that it would be the only time they deviate and they don't really highlight those cars.
Well, there's a, he names a whole bunch of cars. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? And then when she's going, when they're about to steal them, right?
Yeah. I want the Aston Martin. I want this.
Yeah. Her little shopping list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She dropped names that I haven't heard in a long time, like an Excalibur.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a hot car in the 80s for you youngins.
Yeah, and that one, I'm not getting a visual on the Excalibur. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
I'll Did any of them there. Have gull wings? There's got to be a gull wings car.
Oh, I'm sure there was one in there somewhere.
I don't remember seeing one in the movie, but yeah, there were lots of
them. She might have named one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that was it for Black Moon Rising. If you have a movie that you would like us to do, we do take requests, fan challenges, and just like the email we got from Cade, and he really liked some of our episodes. He thinks we're good enough to, specifically, he really liked the Creature from the Black Lagoon and They Live episodes. And he thinks we're good enough to, we should be pitching directly to Hollywood. I'm like, they're listening. And then they're liberally stealing. This way they don't have to pay us. Mm-hmm. But you should. And he's got a pretty cool request for a 1959 kind of creature feature. So we might take a look at that and get that to you sooner rather than later, Cade, because we got a very full April, but we still got one more slot for this month. Absolutely. So maybe we'll sneak that in there.
And yes. We love us some creature features.
Yes, we do.
No lie.
Yeah, we do love a creature feature.
Even though every time you say 1950s monster movie, I do roll my eyes, and then I always love it. So I'm not rolling my eyes this time.
No.
Yeah, I don't know much about this one, so I'll have to do some research to see if it's viable first, make sure nobody's already done it, then it winds up being a comparison. But once we've done a little investigating into it, we might make Cade a happy listener, and hopefully everybody else will be just as happy as Cade is.
Awesome. We get a copy. And and you know what? With some of the fan challenges, like I said way back in the beginning, where we want to find out what they think is the best part, like what the person suggesting it thinks about this movie or what they think is like the nugget of a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think this one might be a good fan challenge, but you're going to have to wait to find out when hopefully we'll fit it in this month, but maybe it'll have to be in May. We'll see how the schedule works, and because we got something crazy planned for the entire month of April. And you're going to start seeing teases on our social media, so take a look at any of those places at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us like Cade did. And you can send us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, and we'll take a look and consider them for sure.
Yes.
We like them because sometimes we like a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, every week is a challenge. But sometimes it's nice when somebody else challenges us.
Yes.
Yes, because it'll be something I will have never considered. And
and there's been some that have been more challenging than others.
Yeah, it does send us through a loop sometimes.
Yes.
It's like, oh boy, my brain's not wired for that.
Mm. And then sometimes it's just, why?
Yeah.
Why would you do that to us?
That's happened before. But I don't know. If it's a creature feature, I feel okay about it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing it, because just based on the title, I'm like, oh, that could be fun.
Yay.
Because it kind of falls into our idea of like, what do you think this movie's about? It's kind of one of those titles, so.
Awesome. Like that idea.
Yeah. I kind of dig that. All right. Well, leave us a 5-star rating and a short review over on Apple Podcasts and iTunes. Help people get their
earballs
on the show, and recommend it to all your friends and family and your family's pets. Mm-hmm. You can get the invasion. Spread it out as far and wide as you can by telling about the show. And we are on most podcatchers, so we're easy to find. Just check out our link tree over on our social media for some of those places. And Sam's been hard at work in another central hub website as well. And of course, you know, our Libsyn site. We have to mention Libsyn because they've been our host site right from the beginning. Yeah. So,
and the hub that we're putting together should be live by the time this episode comes out. Nice. Like it should be fully live. Like every episode should be available on there.
Yeah,
awesome.
He's been hard at work at that.
Yeah, I think we only have like 2016 left to add, and then it's done.
Sweet.
Yeah, that'll be a nice central hub for all 270, almost 280 episodes at this point. So
we've done a lot,
and our brains are still reeling and rolling, and with ideas and. We keep coming up with stuff. I don't think we're running out of ideas.
No.
No, and if we do, we have people like Cade telling us exactly. about stuff that we may not know about.
Exactly.
Yeah, we sometimes depend on you. You know stuff we sometimes don't. It's fallen under our radar. We haven't seen it.
Exactly.
And there are so many movies out there, it's impossible to know every single one. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think we're off to the races now. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we... are out of here.
Vroom, vroom.
What exactly do you expect me to do for you?
Nothing. Not a thing.
Don't lie. Please. Why don't you tell me about your friends?
I don't really have any friends. Do you? What about those people you work for?
Who do you mean?
Come on, we ought to try to trust each other. We have a lot in common, you know.
What?
We're both thieves.
And what do you steal?
This and that. Actually, as soon as my current obligations are taken care of, I'm retiring.
And what do retired thieves do?
They get away.